This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and flowchart with your boy.
My boy.
Matt Wolf and Joe Fit.
Hey.
Yo.
What up, what up, what up?
Dude, let's do this.
What are we doing?
This podcast recording thing.
Oh, yeah.
We have a microphone right in your face.
Oh, yeah. I got confused.
Basically sleep and live with a microphone around you at all times. You just like hang this big microphone around and talk about things, and
I don't know what you're talking about anymore.
Know. I'm starting to get delirious because we're doing a lot of recordings. This is inevitably what happens. The very last recording of the day, a little loopy. It's okay.
We're not loopy in the interview, just the loopy in the intro.
That's right. That they've come to expect that now by now. Yeah. So thank you for hanging with our loopiness.
Nobody listens to our intros. They just press that skip button anyway.
Oh. Don't you say that.
Listen to our intro. Yeah, it's the best part of our podcast.
Yeah, you should go back that 10-second skip or rewind just to make sure you're covering all the intro. It's all the good stuff. All right, what are we doing today, Mr. Matthew?
Today, we're talking to somebody who we don't personally go back with him a ways, but we've been aware of him and kind of followed his career a little bit.
I've lurked a little bit. Yeah, I've lurked back in the days. Gideon Chadwick.
Yeah, Gideon Chadwick is on the show today. And, you know, I used to have a business called learntoblog.com. He had a business called becomeablogger.com with Yaro Starik. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of crossed paths then. And Joe used to have a video service where he made videos for people. And Gideon used to make videos for people. So they kind of crossed paths back then. Mm. To be honest, we were all kind of competitors back then, but now we're great friends.
Yes. We're collaborating.
Yeah, now we all collaborate.
Yes. So we chatted all about, Gideon has an amazing tool called Splashio, and there's actually a really cool offer that he's giving all the Hustle and Flowchart listeners. Mm-hmm. That is splashio.com/hustle. You actually get like $100 worth of value to test, run, or like create some videos.
Yeah, it's a software tool that basically takes your videos and adds captions and headlines and all sorts of cool stuff that you see when you see videos on social media, like the types of videos you see Gary Vaynerchuk do and things like that. He has a tool that does that, and the transcriptions are actually done by real human transcriptionists. It's not automated transcriptions. And anybody who goes to splashio.com/hustle, he's giving you 4 free videos. You can just go get some videos done for, you know, no extra charge.
No, it's legit. And we're actually, with this podcast episode, we did record a video, so that's likely going to be in the show notes. And we're doing a little dry run ourselves with Splashio. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to recording this, we have not used it, but we're very aware of it. And we kind of intentionally went into it like that. So, you know, using a lot of the stuff that we talk about in this episode, we're going to try to replicate some results.
Yeah.
And go distribute these, and hopefully these things, you know, get a bunch of tens of thousands of views or beyond, kind of like what he says on this podcast. And we'll let him say that later.
Yeah. So on the podcast, we talk about various ways to repurpose your videos. We talk about the various social media platforms to post them on. We talk about the social media platforms that are getting the best bang for your buck when you're actually posting them to them. We talk about how to actually be better on video. So we talk about like all the sins you can make on video, and how to do video right, and how to frame yourself on video, and you know, all the sort of best practices to make great videos,
which we get most of those wrong.
Yeah, which we do most of them wrong, but you know, we learn something and we're going to improve them after doing these episodes.
That's why we do this podcast.
Yeah, we're in it to learn, just like you. So we learned a lot from this episode. Gideon is just an amazing dude. We had such a blast chatting with him. Can't say enough good words about him, and excited to go chat with him.
Yeah, so you'll love this, and content repurposing, all that stuff, that's fun. So we do have a lovely sponsor for this episode.
We do. We are sponsored by intercom.com.
Bam, conversational bots and whatnot.
Yes, and we use bots in our business. We, you know, if you go to one of our websites, a lot of times you'll see the little bots that pop up in the corner, and you can interact with us and our team and stuff like that. So we use stuff like this in our business. So there's no room for idle chat in marketing. So if email is your only moneymaker, make room for something new.
Yeah.
Intercom is the only business messenger that starts with real-time chat, then keeps growing your business with conversational bots and guided product tours. Ooh. Were you aware of this?
Yes, but no.
But only because you've read this on a previous episode.
That is correct. But I know they have amazing paths and ways to automate a lot of this, and just have a great conversation. So continue.
Absolutely. Take Intercom customer Unity. In just 12 months, they converted 45% more visitors through Intercom's Messenger. Make room for a new revenue channel. Go to intercom.com/marketing. That's intercom.com/marketing.
Go grab Intercom. It's good stuff. And definitely, you know, don't rely just on the emails. I know we're big on capturing audiences, owned audiences, and having multiple ways to communicate with them. So yes. Intercom will allow you to get yourself out of just email, and you know, those deliverability rates going down and less emails getting responded to and all that stuff. That's the more places
you can interact with the people that visit your site, and the more places you can interact with your customers, the better off you're going to be and the more effective you're going to be. So make sure you get Intercom, intercom.com/marketing. Great, great tool.
Bam. And we got them notes for you. So with Gideon, we talk a lot. He actually, it's kind of funny. We talked about this, like, he's like, everybody, you guys like processes, right? Like, everybody always likes to come prepared with a process. And I think he thought he would only really talk about one process. And we talked about like 10.
Yeah.
just naturally. So the notes are going to be solid for this episode. You're going to want to refer to them. They're absolutely free if you're quick. If you're not quick, they are not free.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this weeks later after the release date, sorry, they've been locked up, but you can get them. But just get the free ones of whatever episode that you're listening to.
This is essentially a masterclass in video marketing.
For sure.
So get the notes. Don't be a fool.
Don't be no fool. They're no cost to you. So go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp, C-O-M-P, hustleandflowchart.com/comp. Get them free notes within about a week or two. You can get them. After that, not so much.
Yep.
But either way, you should go there, get whatever notes, because we'll hook you up.
Let's talk to Gideon Shawick about some cool ninja video stuff.
Hey, Gideon, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe. How you doing?
Great. Yeah, no, we've been bantering back and forth probably for the last like 15 minutes, and I just feel like this is going to be a fun show.
Looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're another James Schramko friend, and yeah, you have a long history with James, it sounds like, so... Good people always come from James.
Yeah, I feel like you've been on our radar for a little bit now. I think so. Joe used to have a video production service where he used to make like slide VSLs and stuff like that for companies. Probably what, around 2009, 2010, you were doing that, and I think your name came up in the video circles around that time.
Right.
So you've been at it for a bit now.
I have, and it's been such an interesting journey. You know, I started about, 14 years ago this year when I became an entrepreneur, and it's been such an incredible journey to see what, you know, all the stuff that's come and gone, and the technologies and the trends and just the sheer power of being able to use video to grow a business. It's been a fun space to be in. I've really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Well, let's take us back a bit to, you know, us being just voyeurs from the outside watching all of your content. What got you to that point, you know, maybe leading up to the 14 years ago and then beyond, you know, within this 14 right. too?
Yeah, so about, let's say, 14 and a half years ago, my wife and I, we were a newly married couple in New Zealand. And I had a job. I was working for a technology company. I was qualified as an electronic engineer, and I had a master in engineering management degree as well. Degrees coming out of my ears. And at that point, I was working for about 5 years. And throughout that time, I thought, hey, this is not what I thought it's going to be. this is not what I thought it's going to be at all. In fact, you know, it was terrible and working for someone else. And you know, I'm saying this not to sort of say that having a job is a bad thing. I think having a job is a fantastic thing. But just for me and for my personality, it wasn't working out very well.
Sure.
And so one day I told my wife, Tineke, I said, hey, why don't we quit our jobs and, you know, emigrate to a new country and start a business? You know, no big deal.
Just uproot everything and everything you know. Good idea.
And I just said, yeah, I'm keen. Let's do it. And, said, okay, let's make a plan. So here's the plan. I will I will start applying for some jobs. And as soon as I get a job, that's our ticket into, you know, let's go to Australia. That was, you know, Australia. We've always been keen to go to Australia because it was nice and warm in Australia. And where I grew up in the Free State in South Africa, it was nice and warm too. And I wanted to get back to a warm place. New Zealand's terribly cold. And she said, okay, let's do it. And so I started applying for jobs. I applied for, I don't know how many, like heaps of jobs. And over 3 months, I got a massively response of exactly zero people who wanted to employ me in Australia. And so that didn't work. So I said, let's make another plan.
Was that
so
more then, you saying, nah, not this one, not this one? Or
No. It's like I was keen, like I want to get this job. And they're all saying, we call it PFOs here in Australia. And so which stands for please fudge off, you know.
You can say whatever you want here. But yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So I was getting all these PFOs and I said, Tineke, you better, why don't you start applying for jobs? And so she started applying for jobs. Within a week, she had 3 job offers and she flew over that end of the week, the Friday, to Australia and did the 3 interviews, and then she could decide between any 3 of them. So she decided on one. A month later, we landed in Australia, and then she started working and I started mucking around trying to figure out what is this business thing and what is I actually want to be doing. And I mean, I didn't have a clue. I remember trying to figure out what it is that I wanted to do or create. I knew that I wanted to create something. I just didn't know what. So I went to visit this franchise expo, and I went walking there. And then this one thing that stood out to me, there was this dog washing business. Mm-hmm. And I thought, hey, that's kind of interesting. I mean, I'm not sure if I would want to wash dogs for a living, but if someone else could start washing dogs and turn it into a successful franchise, I mean, surely I could create something, you know, as well, maybe not washing dogs, but I could do something too and be successful. And it was quite an inspiration for me. I ended up writing a book, an ebook, and selling it. And I learned this through my first mentor, and it was pretty cool. I wrote the book in about 21 days, and then I sold it through a direct marketing sort of a method. And my first mentor, he had a big list of people, had about 10,000 people on his email database. He promoted for me and went ballistic. I remember waking up he sent the email on the Friday night, my time, because he was in Europe. Mm-hmm. And I wake up the next morning, Saturday morning, and I just see in my email inbox, sale, 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 sale. And I'm going, what the heck? And, you know, this is the first sales that I ever made. Yeah, and I was just sitting there in my bed, not bedroom, living room, writing this book in coffee shops, you know, and thinking, wow, this is unreal. This could be a career. And so I was on this state of euphoria. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was I didn't have any more JV partners to promote for me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to generate traffic. And I mean, let's face it, having an ebook, one ebook as your product is not actually a business.
No, it's a good way to capture some leads, but what do you do now?
Right. I mean, I sold it for $47, which is actually quite a lot of money, you know, for just a book, if you think about it.
Sure.
Anyway, this was back in 2006, 2007. And so then I thought, okay, gosh, I've got to figure out this game because, you know, it's not fair if my wife's working all this time and she's paying the bills and, you know, I'm sort of mucking around here and not making any money. And, you know, after 6 months, I thought I've got to do something, you know, to make this happen because my sales went dead, completely dead. I had this nice spike and then nothing. And then I thought, okay, well, I better let me interview people and ask them how the heck they did it. Successful folks, you know, and we did it all on video. I had a handy cam back then. And, gosh, it was tough back then. It was the files for starters were so big. It killed my PC, like literally killed it. Deal with the big files.
Oh my God.
And then what ended up happening was, to cut a long story short, this project, it probably, I worked on it for like 6 months or something. And I was going to publish these interviews in a membership site and then sell that, you know, and to make money from. Mm-hmm. But it was just such a big project. It ended up falling over because it was too complicated. And I gave up on it essentially. And this is about, actually, I'm not sure if I got all my numbers right here, but it took me about, after that initial success of selling my book, it took me about 2 years to figure out the game. Mm. And during those 2 years was probably one of the toughest times of my entrepreneurial career because, you know, we got to a point where, you know, Tinek and I were going, looking at each other and saying, this kind of sucks. You know, we don't have a car. We're not going out. We're not buying any clothes. Mm. Except for underwear. And
so you can afford her. You don't have to leave your house. Walking, so.
You know, we were living comfortably, but we felt a bit like paupers in a way. And, and you know, all her income was being spent on our living costs and we had nothing left over. And we got to the point where we're saying, this sucks. Let's just try and get a job again, or let's move back to New Zealand or whatever. And I was really despondent at that point. But luckily what happened was one of the people that I interviewed in my interview series was Yaro Starak. And mm-hmm. and then we became friends as a result of that. And he noticed that I was good with video, and he said, let's do this video project together. We ended up starting a brand called Become a Blogger. It's still running today. You know, within 2 weeks of launch, actually before we even launched, we published 10 little videos that showed people how to set up a blog. And before we even launched, we had about 300,000 downloads of those videos.
Wow.
And then we launched. Within 2 weeks, we had about 10,000 people join our email database. And within a month, we had an income of about $23,000. Wow. And, you know, going from zero, or it's actually not zero, it was negative money over those 2 years after my initial little bit of success, and then up to like 23K per month for the business, was incredible. It was, you know, and that's where I really saw the potential. And you know, if it wasn't for that, you know, we would have stopped. So that was my first little introduction to success with an online-based business. And then from there, I've just been building on that, and every single project that I've done since then, and that was in 2008, I think, we did Become a Blogger. Mm-hmm. And every project since then has just been in the video space, doing something, had something to do with video. And so today I've got Splashio, and which is a video captioning service, and really enjoying it, and still just mm-hmm. just being amazed by all the cool stuff coming out in the video space.
I love it. Now with Become a Blogger, I'm curious, how did you get that initial growth? I know you partnered with Yaro on that one, but what did you guys do to kind of get it up to that level so quickly?
Well, you see, I was kind of lucky there with that project because I brought the operations experience with me and the video production experience with me, and Yaro brought the a deeper knowledge of blogging and strategic business building using blogging with him, mm-hmm. and very importantly the audience. He already had, I think, 20,000 people on his database, his email database, mm-hmm. But also very importantly, he had some really good connections with industry leaders, with, you know, joint venture partners who ended up promoting for us for that launch. So that was our initial launch, and then from there the growth was we had a lot through word of mouth. Mm-hmm. People loved what we were doing because we were like the first video-based blogging training course, mm-hmm. as far as I know, in the world. I wasn't aware of any other ones at that particular time. There were a few that came after, of course, mm-hmm. But it was kind of new and exciting. So a lot of people were sharing their stories, and of course Yaro's blog Entrepreneur's Journey at the time was mm-hmm. getting a lot of traffic too, so he would constantly drive people into the Become a Blogger brand as well. And then the other thing we did was every 6 months or so we would relaunch, and that was fun, mm-hmm. because that was such easy money because we already had everything created, and we just basically reused all our existing assets to relaunch into the same market, basically.
Yeah.
So those were the main growth engines for us.
It's so interesting because there's like so many parallels between my journey and your journey. One of my first brands was actually called learntoblog.com. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. But I had like I had a real deep knowledge of blogging, and then I brought in a partner, Bradley Will, who was my business partner on that, and he was really good at sales, and he had a lot of networks and connections. I sold that business back in 2015. I don't even think it's live anymore. But yeah, so it's just, it's a very, very interesting how, you know, there's some parallels there. I had a course on blogging that, that came out, and I didn't know how to market it. So I brought on somebody that had the marketing knowledge because I had the deep blogging knowledge.
Right. Awesome. Yeah, it's, I mean, that's almost very similar. I'm intrigued. When did you do this? Was this before 2008 or after?
Yeah. So I quit my day job basically in 2009. And I formed a company called the WordPress Classroom at the time. And so the WordPress Classroom, I ran that for a couple years from till about 2011. And then I realized it's probably not the smartest idea to have WordPress in my brand name because WordPress is a trademarked brand already. So I rebranded when my partner came in. We rebranded it as learntoblog.com. That was around 2011. And then I sold the business in 2015. So
But yeah, very cool. Similar. Like he was sales. He brought in a whole different aspect. I mean, this is like us talking about partnerships prior to hitting record. Is it sounds like, I mean, that's why he's going to shore up things that I am not the best at and vice versa. Same with you in that period of time. How are you with partnerships now? Do you have anybody on the team with you or?
No, I'm kind of taking a bit of a break from partnerships. It's that's also been an incredible interesting learning journey for me. So Yara was my first, actually Yara was my second partner, my first successful partner. Before that, I did have a partnership with someone else and it just didn't work out for a number of reasons, but I learned a lot of lessons. So with Yara, it was the first successful ones. We had our own challenges too, like any partnership. But you know, me and Yara are still friends. I think that's one of the true test cases for a successful partnership. If you can still be friends, you know, after a decade. But we also did really well together. We worked together well. We complemented each other really well. I did a partnership in the magic niche where I teamed up with a local magician in Brisbane. He did the magic and impressed all the pretty girls in the streets of Brisbane. And I did I had the handy cam with me and did the video marketing and sort of set up the business and the operation side of it again. At that point, I had a bit more experience with the marketing side so we could, you know, grow something. That was really cool. We got to, I think about 50,000 subscribers organically We got a ton of subscribers anyway within the first year. And that became the world's number one free magic tricks channel.
Wow.
On YouTube. I'm not sure where it is at the moment, but you know, I left the business after the first year. The next partnership was with VRoll, which I exited at the start of this year, where I teamed up with a couple of other co-founders, JC and Sophie, with a company called VRoll, and we, you know, we automated the video production of video ads, you know, using software. So all of them were different. There are some similarities, but each time I would learn a new lesson. And one of the key lessons I learned was that you can move faster and achieve more when you partner up with someone. One of the other key lessons I learned, which is also a lesson that I learned way back from Napoleon Hill with the mastermind principle, is that if for a true mastermind to be successful, you need three things. You need to have a common goal for two or more people working together in a spirit of harmony. Those three things need to be together. And if any one of those three things are absent, then the chances are very low of succeeding. And if I look back at my successful partnerships, the ones that became successful were the ones where there was all three of those things present. And whenever things would get rocky or if it would start failing, it would be because, the common goal and two or more people working together was easy, right? But the working in harmony together with someone else, that would always be the biggest challenge, especially for me. I'm quite a difficult person to work with. So that's the big challenge. If you can find someone that you can work together well with, I mean, it doesn't mean that you might not have any arguments or anything, but I think the point is that you can come back to harmony all the time and and work on your business together within that spirit of harmony, I think you've got a much bigger chance of success.
And it's true. We were in a podcast mastermind last week, and we realized, oh, there's, even though we're all podcasters, that's the similarities behind us all. Matt and I have different skill sets to most of that room, and vice versa. They were selling a lot higher ticket stuff and all that, and we bring in the interesting ways to grow a list with podcast monetization and growth. And so it's like, it's just really cool because we can all harmonize and actually help each other, and no one's stepping on toes. It's all collaboration. So exactly. If we feel like, if you have different skill sets out there, not all the same, like we're all really good video guys, we're all really good podcasters, great at growth. It sets yourself up for a better partnership and also mastermind and all that.
Absolutely. And I think there's definitely pros and cons. You know, that you can, I think the leverage side of it is probably the most attractive side of partnering with someone else, because you leverage their knowledge and experience and contacts, everything, and you have those synergies working together. One thing that I'm really enjoying at the moment with Splash Air is that, you know, it's, I don't have any partners in the business, and it's amazing how quickly I can make decisions now.
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah. There's, I still have a mastermind within the business, but it's not like a partnership. You know, so the buck stops at me. You know, 100%. If a decision needs to be made, a tough one, you know, it comes down to me, and I can decide really quickly, which helps me move things through a lot faster, which is, I really enjoy that. I like having that control. I am probably a bit of a control freak, even though I would like to think that I'm not, but I probably am.
Okay. I think one of the keys to the partnership for us has been, Joe has key areas that he makes the final decision in, and I have key areas that I make the final decision in. So the decision making in the business is separated. Mm-hmm. Like when it comes to technology and the website and ad stuff and anything like real technical, I'll just do it. I don't even consult with Joe. Mm-hmm. He trusts my judgment on that stuff. It just happens. When it comes to like networking, meeting, bringing new guests on the show, going on other people's shows, being involved in summits, all that kind of stuff, Joe knows like where to go and what to do. And so we just have separation of the decision making. And I feel like that's a key point that makes it work. We don't sit around and debate on every single thing that needs to happen.
That's good.
I have my zone. He has his zone, and we don't really interfere with each other.
Took us a while to get to that point, though.
That's right.
It wasn't like out of the gate, and you know, we knew. So it's, I mean, we've been partners for over 10 years, I guess, technically, you know, in and out of different businesses. Right. So you learn a lot over time.
But I do, and I think it's, I mean, I like the ideas from Gina Wickman's Traction, for example, where he talks about the entrepreneur, what do you call it, operating system. But one of the key ideas there is the having the two people in the business who drive it forward. You've got the visionary and the integrator. Mm-hmm. And the idea of having those two people essentially where, you know, they complement each other, but they're very different functions, and they make decisions about very different things. That makes a lot of sense to me. So I don't have a proper integrator within Splashio just yet, but I mean, it's kind of like, if I look at the bigger successes we've had, that's kind of where we had that sort of a setup. Like Become a Blogger was like that, you know, where Yaro was the visionary and I was the integrator, even though I'm a visionary myself. Like I played integrator role. Then with the magic business there, I played, actually I played both roles, but,
you can do that. It's okay.
That's right. And what was the other one? So V role was interesting. So there was definitely more the visionary role, and then my co-founders, they were more the integrator role. And you know, that we did, it was a good relationship. I mean, it didn't come without our own struggles, but it was still certainly a good kind of a setup in that sort of a structure. Mm-hmm. So I think, I mean, going forward, it would be, for something like Splash, it'd be great to get an integrator on board at some point to help with that separation of decisions, but also separation of, it's a different kind of energy. It's a different kind of tasks you've got to perform, you know, for those different roles. So I really like that idea.
And we do have an integrator in our company. We actually have an integrator, Shannon, who's our ops manager.
Right.
And so there are two of us, which are visionaries / integrators in our own silos, I guess. And then you have the core integrator, that can handle the team processes, schedule, all the day-to-day stuff, which,
nice.
Yeah, but again, it's like an organic thing. When it's right, it kind of like, you know, it's time to get someone in that role. You're like, man, I can't keep up with anything. I need someone to like help me with the day to day. So
no, it's definitely, you get to a stage where I think if I remember right from reading the book, it's you know, as an entrepreneur, it's quite all right to be both a visionary and integrator starting out. And you know, I've done that many times before. But the trouble with that is if you're a, say you're a visionary sort of an entrepreneur and you're performing integrator sort of tasks, you know, like more operations sort of work, eventually you're going to burn out and you won't have enough time to spend on the vision for the business. And vice versa as well. You know, if you're more of an integrator sort of entrepreneur, and you do both, you know, eventually, you know, you're kind of going to burn out because you're not going to have the vision for the business. So I think at some point there's a transition where we've got to, you've got to find someone to help you with that sort of work, you know, so that you don't, you don't burn out and you spend more time on the stuff that you're really gifted for, which is actually quite a big theme of what I've been working on Splat. Like a backstory for Splashio is that it's actually an experiment for something bigger that I'm working on,
really?
A bigger sort of life work that I'm working on, I suppose, which is, working on a theory or a system, I'm not quite sure, philosophy, I guess, for being able to build successful businesses, being able to be a successful entrepreneur and happy at the same time.
That's the key part.
Because I've had success where I've been very, you know, financially successful, but then miserable as well. And so I challenged myself, like, look, is it possible to create a business that's successful and I'm happy and everyone else building any business is success, happy as well. So Splashio is that experiment now, really. It's a case study for me for something longer term that I'm working on.
Well, let's get into that.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's dive into Splashio. Could you kind of give us the overview of what it does and you know, why somebody would want to use Splashio?
Absolutely. So we help people who's got an intense desire to get their voice out there and to be seen. We help them do that, and so one of the first ways we're doing that is with basically capturing people's videos and getting it ready for social media distribution, and so basically people submit their videos to us, their raw videos, and then we transcribe it for them and burn those transcriptions as captions into the videos. That's a really important feature, and then also format it in a like a there's all sorts of different formats depending on which platform, but one where there's a clear headline, for example, at the top of the video, then the video, and then the captions. Sometimes we can add a call to action and some logo animations, basically framing the whole thing up so that it looks professional and gets you the result. Some of our clients are getting 2 to 3 times more views just from using the service, which is incredible. There's one guy, Tim Saunders, he's one of his videos on LinkedIn, if you guys want to dig into that at some point, went totally viral at like 1.4 million views, which I didn't even know was possible on LinkedIn. You know, so, so people with a message, people who want to get seen at scale and make a real big impact, those are the people we want to help help get their message out there. And one of the first ways we're doing that is with helping them caption their videos. And the reason we do that is because nowadays, you look at what's happening on social media. Most people watch their content on silent.
That's right.
They're either on the train or in a meeting, whatever, and the video comes up. It auto plays, and you know, if it doesn't have captions on it, then people just keep on scrolling. You know, because they're not always able to press play and listen to the video. So adding captions adds hugely to the engagement and retention of people watching your actual content. And that's why we're getting such, you know, dramatic increases when people start using the service. And you know, it's just a way that we're using right now to help engage viewers more for our clients. And as a result of that, get more views and more exposure from using that as a result.
That's what it seems like. It's an amazing tool for not only engagement, but to breathe life into all this content that we're working so hard to create, like this podcast will get turned into a Splashio video, maybe numerous, on one on your side, one on our side, because we'll definitely do like a little case study around just what can transpire of this video, of this podcast, because we are recording video as we're speaking this out. It's just like we're big fans of just trying to squeeze as much as you can out of every piece of content and putting them on multiple platforms.
The repurposing thing is an incredible opportunity for businesses. Look how easy, relatively easy it is for us right now to create this content, right? We both have our video cameras on, and we're just talking, it's effortless in a way. And the next step is really just to chop that up afterwards and push it through something like Splashio to get it into a format that's consumable for, for the masses or for your audience. I don't know, like people are busy, they don't always have time to sit and watch like an hour long interview. But if it's like a 3-minute little snippet of that interview, of a part from that interview, they're much more likely to consume that and watch that and then might be encouraged to go and watch the longer one later on. You know, they might save it and go, wow, this was a cool bit. I wonder what I want to watch the longer the longer version of this. And you see that time and time again. Someone who does this really well is Brian Rose from London Real. So he does these really amazing interviews, like in-person interviews, and he does a fantastic job at it, right, with like a multi-camera sort of setup, really nice studio, and creates this long-form content that he publishes on YouTube. These things go viral in and of themselves, but then he also chops that up, and publishes the chopped up versions on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I'm not even sure wherever else, but where I've seen them, those places. And so you sometimes, like, actually the way that I got introduced to London Real and Brian Rose was I watched a short video clip from him, one of his interviews on, I think it was Instagram or something, and then I thought, hey, this is cool, I want to see the bigger interview. Go to YouTube or go to the site, whatever. And so I think basically what we're doing now is creating this massive ability to create a content library where, as you build it, you basically can pick and choose every week or every day from what you want to publish. I think it can create some tremendous leverage. The thing is, you want to be current. You want to be always sort of there at the forefront of people's minds. And one of the best ways of doing that is through publishing video on the different social media platforms.
Yeah. I see Gary Vaynerchuk do that kind of thing a lot too. If you follow him on like Instagram or whatever, he's got the like little 3-minute clips or whatever from his podcast, and it's got the captions popping and there's a headline. And, I'm assuming he's using a tool like Splashio to generate all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. Actually, he's done it really smart way. He doesn't use Splashio. Unfortunately, I haven't met Gary yet. Gary, if you're listening, come and see us. But he's actually really smart with the way he does his content now. He's actually just open sourced his content production, where he's basically created the requirements for what he wants for his content, and then he's opened it up to his audience and said, if you want to publish videos or create videos for us, send it to us. If we like it, we'll publish it and we'll link back to your profile or whatever.
Oh, that's really smart. I didn't know that.
That's smart, isn't it? It's a recent thing he just initiated. So
yeah.
But yeah, the reason why he keeps on doing it is because it works. That sort of format, it works incredibly well. It's like 80, I think it's 85% of people at least on Facebook who watches their video on silent content, on silent autoplay. So you gotta capture that audience. Absolutely. If you're not captioning your videos and you don't have a good headline to stop them in their tracks, you're definitely losing out. There's no doubt.
Well, it sounds to me like a cool little growth hack that somebody can try is go get a Splashio account, go download some videos of Gary Vaynerchuk, put them in your own Splashio account, make videos, and get Gary to go publish them on his site for you.
Totally. Yep. Totally do that. That's absolutely.
Funny. That's great. Yeah. I mean, the proof is out there. And I caught myself the other night, even, on Instagram, for some reason, I was like by myself and there was like no reason why it should be on silent mode. And I was just sucked in by the captions and but I consciously caught myself. I was like, that's the power of it. And I didn't even know we were going to talk about that, but, it's so true. So yeah, I can catch myself on doing it.
Now, how accurate is the transcriptions and the captioning and all that kind of stuff? Is it like human transcription or is it AI or how does that whole thing work?
Yeah. So we decided to go for human transcription. And because one of our promises is to have 100% accurate transcriptions and captions. And that's really important. If you think about the engagement factor, we already know everybody's busy, right? And there's so many distractions. If you've got captions that are faulty, people reading it along on silent play, and there's a typo or there's a full stop not in the right place, or there's a lack of quotation marks, or even the it's not the right kind of sound bite that's being written. It's like it sort of breaks the thought in the middle. it creates interruptions in the attention span of the viewer. And with each interruption like that, it creates an opportunity for them to click away. Mm-hmm. And so what's really important that we've noticed is that you want to get that the captioning to as close as 100% as possible. And so that's one of our promises. And the best way we found to do that is through human-based subscription. AI is not quite there yet. I mean, there's some that promise like a 90, 95, 98% accuracy.
Wow.
But what people don't realize is that that extra 2% that gets missed, if you want to fix that up, it takes you about... it takes you about 98% of your time to fix up those things. And we found the same with we tested that in our team. We thought, okay, maybe we could save some money and time here by just using AI to do the auto transcriptions for us. And it actually took us longer and it was more painful to do than to just start from scratch, with human-based transcription. So that's something that's one of our key distinctions. I think we painstakingly go through the process of making sure you get a good result back. And if it's not 100%, we work with you until it's 100%. Because there's variables, like there's accents, there's industry jargon, people's names with different spelling. Mm-hmm. This is one that's really interesting that we didn't see coming, but personal preferences as well. Like between the different countries, there's different preferences as to how things should be written and where quotation marks should be used, all this sort of stuff. So we build that into our process to help people get a result that's really, really good.
That makes sense. Like the word theater in the US, we spell it theater. In the UK, they spell it theater.
Color and color. And
I shouldn't try to spell while recording.
I know, I purposely don't spell anything or math, really. It doesn't go well. I can relate to just the caption element, but even the subtleties, like you said, full stops in the right place, not a paragraph of text, maybe in the wrong timing of a thought. Because that's the stuff I would think about. And like I thought I was insane, but when I was making all these VSLs, during product launch days, like this is what you were saying in my video days, that is what I focused on the most was the timing of the message, what's being highlighted maybe in that block of text, just a couple keywords. Like I was immersed in things like Video Boss, and I did watch a lot of, I remember videos of you back in the day, I think with the multi-monitors and screen flow, and I thought that was or multi-cameras or whatever it was. I was like, that's genius. But just subtleties like that, we noticed that, constant movement of text, but also thoughts all concise and shown at the right timing. Mm. It matters massively for engagement. Mm. And so it just carries over now. Yeah.
So I can absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, when you upload your video, it's kind of a done deal. It's like to take it off again and try and fix it. Nobody does that, So you kind of get one shot, with getting it right with your video. And if it's got errors in it, and sometimes the errors are not easy to fix because with AI, for example, one of the major things that I see troublesome with them is that it would how there's a certain amount of text that can be displayed at a time, right? Mm-hmm. So it would sometimes cut a train of thoughts or thought bites, I guess we could call it, in half. And it might only, then one or two words might flow over onto the next slide or the next text delivery, and sometimes there's a couple of seconds in between that. So you already read what's going on and go, this sentence is sort of half, what's the... It needs two more words, but you can't see it yet because the person speaks slower than you can read, right? Mm-hmm. And then it breaks that thought. It breaks the flow. And then you go, I want to click away. So it's something as subtle and as simple as that can stop people. And it's almost like psychologists call this a hygiene factor. Hmm. And it's kind of the principle where you only notice it if it's not there. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So in this case, you only notice the lack of flow when it's not there, right? So a classic example is when you're walking into someone's house and there's mess all over the place. Like the first thing you notice, there's someone's underwear on the ground, or there's
the smell of lipstick a cat on in the
smell of a cat, or there's lipstick on the cup. You notice it. Whereas if all those things are gone, if it's like clean and whatever else, you don't even notice necessarily that it's clean. You know, like when you drink a cup of coffee and there's no lipstick marks on it, you don't even think about it. You just drink. So it's the same sort of thing with captions. There's video production in general too. There are hygiene factors that you've got to get in place, and if you don't, it's gonna create distraction and reduce retention and engagement as a result.
Well, I have a question. So, this is if you use Splashio or not. Those listening, what are some good, factors to know about hygiene factors when you're actually recording the video? So having things in mind to be, all right, avoid these handful of things.
So. I've been preaching this for about 14 years.
I know. I figured this is a lob in a ball.
and it's a great question because it's so easy to get wrong. But there are some really simple things you can get right when you're recording a video. So if it's a talking head kind of video in particular, which most of our clients are talking head sort of videos, or sometimes it's people speaking on stage and, that sort of thing. But let's say it's a talking head video. There are a couple of things you can do that would instantly, without much trouble, massively improve that hygiene factor. Let's take three things. Okay, so the most important thing is your sound. So a lot of people don't realize this, but if you've got a great video quality, but your sound is bad, that can turn people off. So this is, of course, assuming people watch it now with sound on, right? But for that chance that when people do press play, make sure you've got a good microphone to record good sound. The second thing is uncanny how simple it is and easy to fix, especially with the cameras that are being used today on people's smartphones, right? And that is lighting. Just with good lighting, you can improve the quality of your video image like heaps. And the trouble with the cameras on smartphones is that the lenses are not quite there yet for low quality light performance. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is that if it doesn't have good lighting, then it can look pretty bad.
Sure.
So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is just the framing of the shot. Quite often it's more often than not, especially with people new to video production or being on video, that I see that their framing is completely off. More often than not, they'd be too low in the shot. Mm-hmm. And I'm
you
not
mean
sure
like I am
with
right
that.
Now?
No, yeah, there's too much space between the top of your head.
I know, and, yeah. We're not geared for video here.
Strictly speaking. But if you can see my video at the moment, there's not a lot of space. There's almost nothing between the top of my head and the top of the video. And I think with online video in particular, that's a principle. I think. I don't know. It depends on how close you are to the camera, but you don't want too much space there between the top of your head, and the top of the screen, and that can if you can get your eyes sort of on the top third vertical, that's quite a good spot. It's fine to be in the middle for the video. So those three things: just getting the sound right, a good lighting, and framing your shot. Will already make you record videos a lot better, where people won't wonder, but what's wrong with that guy's face, or why is her image so low? Couldn't she be higher up in the screen? Whatever. And then there are a bunch of other things that are incremental improvements. Just your background is something that's important. You don't want to create any reason for people to get distracted. Mm-hmm. So as long as it's not distracting, it's fine. This is where using DSLR cameras, for example, is advantageous, because you can have a messy background, but you just blur it out.
That's right.
With the fuzzy, what's called a depth of field thing. There's a lot of other things you can do for how you actually create your content. Like, what do you talk about, for example, and how do you talk about it in such a way that it's engaging? And there's formulas for that, that you can use if you're a bit stuck at the beginning. One really good formula is the age-old formula AIDCA, which is attention, interest, desire, conviction, action. Right. Mm. So you go through that formula for your video content. There's a bunch of other ones too, but the idea of just sort of thinking about how you can make your video content concise and engaging, you know, can do a lot towards you creating more engaging video content for sure.
That's amazing. And cool. I feel like we're only hitting one of those three things in this video, right? The lighting, I'm like, we have a fan light right there. No, that's, and we're super aware of that. That's why we don't do a lot of video with this.
Right.
But no, those are amazing tips. And really, I mean, if we were thinking about it, we can get a DSLR, probably put it in the corner and like blur out a lot of the background and look probably, you know, one light would do wonders. But for another day.
Ultimately, though, I think it is important to note, though, that you know you can do all these, you can get all these hygiene factors right, but if you don't have a good message, then none of those things really matter. Mm. You know, so that it kind of goes without saying. It's sort of an assumption, but it's actually remarkably hard to get right, because to get it right, you've got to have a really really good understanding of who you're talking to, and understand what it is that they want to hear from you and what it is they want to learn from you, or what problem it is that they want to solve in their lives, or what they want to be entertained about, whatever it is. Like that's one of the key things to figure out is what it is that they want. And for that, for you to know that, you need to get to know them really well. And, sure. and that's why it's so difficult at the beginning to have success, because it, you know, if you're new to an industry, you don't understand the marketplace really well yet. And so the longer you're in an industry and the more you talk to your audience, the more you figure out what it is that they want. And then you can create messaging that really resonates with that. That's one thing. The other thing that I've noticed is it's quite possible to know what it is that you're supposed to say, and you can say the right thing, but it still doesn't resonate. And I think the reason for that has to do with whether that stuff you talk about actually resonates with you as a person. And so I think there's a balance here between being able to talk from an area of passion, an area of excitement, an area of high energy, or something that you're excited about, and what the other person wants to learn about. And I think when you can marriage those two and bring them together, and combine it with those hygiene factors, I mean, your chance of success goes through the roof.
Mm-hmm. I love it. No, that's perfect. And that's where we're always like balancing topics and, you know, between our interests and whatnot on this podcast. You know, it's a prime example because we've definitely morphed over time as we've learned more of what our listeners want to hear from us, but also, you know, through feedback and talking to folks, and then also where our interest lies. I'm like, we can't just talk tactics all day long, or our brains are just going to get fried pretty quickly. So that's why we integrate more mindset stuff. We'll talk about stories, you know, going back in your past, talking about anxiety with entrepreneurs, how we all can kind of get past that in different ways. That's how we kind of sprinkle a little interest markers around.
I'm glad you mentioned the story factor, actually, because that's something that engages by nature. So if you're a good storyteller on video, I mean that's going to help you a lot, because you know, story by nature is so engaging. I mean, do you know what happened to me just yesterday?
I do, actually. Something. No, I'm just kidding. No, go ahead.
Okay, nothing happened, but I just used that as an example to begin a story. But I bet everyone watching this or listening to this, and even you guys, you sort of leaned in proverbially a little, you know, what do you call it, metaphorically. Yeah. You leaned in a little bit to hear what happened to me yesterday, because, you know, it's a story. It was the beginning of a story. And when you tell a story, that's exactly what happens. People sitting around, it's like that effect of sitting around the campfire and people leaning in. Hey, there's the honcho or top dog or whoever, someone is telling a story of an experience that I can relate to, or that, you know, the viewers can relate to and learn from. I mean, that's how we've learned, right? Lessons throughout the eons, we would pass the stories onto each other, and that's how we would teach our kids as well. Like the greatest teachers in the world are ones who can use story and parables to bring a message across, and because it's so engaging, and we learn better with stories. So I think we learn better because it's so engaging. You know, that's sort of like a circular sort of a thing. But if you can sprinkle that into your videos, I mean, even if you could start off your videos with the beginning of a story, like, you know, even something like, you know what happened to me yesterday? let me I'll tell you in a second, you know, or something like that.
Open loop.
Yeah, open loop. Exactly. Yeah.
That's cool. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask about the quantum content process, the whole flow that you have of what you do with your content once you create it. I know you said you've got a little flow that you do, but if you had another question that was on the same vein, I don't want to change topics too abruptly.
We're good. We're flowing. Go for that process. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. Well,
it's boring
and exciting at the same time. So,
well, let's preface it in that, like, if you don't have a system for anything you're doing, consistency is going to drop off. I mean, that's how our original podcast all faded because we just didn't have a good system. Like, we batch record all of our episodes at content calendars, team, all that stuff. So it's pretty much teeing you up for all the video that you do and your process.
Yeah, no, totally. I totally agree. It's like our business couldn't succeed without the processes that we have in place. We would completely fail. So from that point of view, it's actually really exciting because it helps us be much more successful, much easier. There might be, you know, some people don't like setting up systems or designing it, whatever, and that's fine. You just get someone else to do it for you. But I think you need to get excited about getting it implemented in your business because it gives you the end result that you're after, which is amazing. So, you know, just as an example, we only have two kinds of activities in our business. We have either projects or we have processes. And it's important to distinguish between those two. You know, are we working on a process now or are we working on a project? Mm-hmm. And the process kind of things are things that happen regularly on a continual basis and there's repetitive sort of tasks, whereas the projects are more unique in nature and there's, you know, unique tasks for each project with a unique outcome. Mm-hmm. And with the process, the outcome is always the same. Mm-hmm. So it's important to distinguish between those two and you need the processes, absolutely. So what happened was So I'm not new to video, right? I've been in this space for 14 years or so, mm-hmm. Or maybe say 12 years to be a bit more accurate. But recently I've been struggling for me personally to get into the content game because I've been a little bit out of it. I've been taking more of a backseat role to being in front of the business. Like for V-Roll, for example, I was more the playing the entrepreneur and I didn't want to be in the content. We actually hired someone else to do the content for us. It wasn't my face. And I didn't want to have my face too associated with the business in case I wanted to sell the business one day. Mm-hmm. But recently with Splashy, I'm finding that I'm keen to get back into it again, but it's just like all over the show. And I couldn't consistently create content. So I thought, well, let's freaking create a damn process that can help me get into some more flow. Mm-hmm. And exactly what we did. So it's actually really simple once you've got it in place. There's two parts to it. One is designing the actual process, and we just use something like Asana. You could use Trello as well, where you basically create what we call swimming lanes. And a swimming lane is something that one person can handle on their own. Mm-hmm. And once they're done with it, they can pass it on to the next swimming lane for either themselves or for the next person. And what that does is it allows you to figure out a way where you don't have to do it all yourself anymore. You can assign these swimming lanes to different people to take care of for you. So that's the first thing, creating a process with different swimming lanes that you can run your videos through in this case. The second thing is scheduling in when certain things are going to happen. So it's literally a matter of assigning or allocating time during the week when certain activities will happen during the week or during the month. So in my case, I have at the moment 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 8:30 to 9:30 is my content publishing time. Mm-hmm. So I've blocked that time out into infinity on my calendar until mm-hmm. I get sick of it, right? Mm-hmm. So every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there's a block there that I can't do anything else except publish content. Mm-hmm. Right. Once a month, I've blocked out a full day that's dedicated to. It's a Friday because it just works with our schedule. But on a Friday, once a month, it's dedicated to either recording new content or coming up with new content ideas. Basically, a content creation day, mm-hmm. and the idea is to create enough content for at least the next month. And there's various ways of doing that. But those are the two things, building the process with different swimming lanes and then scheduling in advance these things, right? Mm-hmm. So So that you don't just have a cool process, but actually you're reminded every week or every month that that's during that time, that's when the process kicks in, you know? Right. So, yep. So then in terms of the actual process, more details is, you know, we've got an inbox, for example, an inbox column where every time there's a new idea for a video, it goes in there, boom. Every time we have a long form content video that we can cut up and chop up into little sound bites or video bites that we can process through the Splash Show business, it goes in there, boom. So for example, this interview with you guys, after this call, it'll go into the inbox as a long form video that can get processed down the track. Nice. The next column is basically, has it been edited? You know, if it's a long form video, has it been, you know, processed or edited? Sometimes some videos need some editing. That I don't use that column as much because we don't, that's the other thing with captioning, just as a sideline. What I figured out is that when you start captioning your videos, you don't actually need to edit them anymore because the only real point of editing with our kind of videos is to increase engagement. And you get that engagement once you start captioning them. So you don't need to edit anymore.
That's right.
I mean, Johnny Dumas is one of our users. He literally, what he does, he records on his iPhone and then no editing, he sends us the video and that gets processed.
Yeah.
Boom, done.
It's authentic. It's more just raw, you know, in the moment kind of stuff.
Correct.
That's what works best
absolutely.
For us.
Yeah. So there's an edited column. It's the second one. And then the third column is whether it's been either recorded, if it's a long form sort of video, or if it's been, if it's either recorded, if it's a short form video like that I just do myself on the camera, just one-off sort of videos like that, or has it been snipped from a long form video? So that's with that column. The next column I have is, has it been submitted to Splashio for getting captioned and put into the right format? From there, the next column is, has it been approved, you know, by me or someone in the team to make sure that it's ready for the next stage. Like sometimes, you know, you got to go back and fix a caption or the headline's not right or whatever else. So there's an approval stage. The next stage is has the metadata been created? So the metadata for us is basically the title, description, and tags for each video. And then the following one is published. Has it been published? There is another one beyond that as well, which is, has it been promoted? So some videos might get promoted, you know, might spend some ads on it. So we just push it through to that stage as well.
Sure.
So those are different stages. So inbox, edited, recorded or snipped, submitted to Splashio, approved, metadata created, published and promoted.
I love that.
And it works like magic. I mean, it's actually really simple. Once you've got the system set up and you've got it scheduled in, you just boom, 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 just push it through the different swimming lanes and you end up with a really nice content library with that. Yeah. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that comes around now, all I have to do is go to our content library that's been through this process and pick a video that I want to publish for that particular day.
Just cool. Post it. You should, I know this is a newer process for you, but I don't know if your plans are, but it seems like a perfect bonus or lead in into using Splashio as their service for this whole process. I mean,
yeah, I do want to create a video about it or some sort of training for our users so that they can actually see the process in action. Cause it's pretty cool. Once you get it going, I'm trying to think what's it compared to. It's almost like, it's like bicycling compared to driving in a Ferrari type of thing. Your efficiency just goes through the roof. Yeah. It's much more fun. Yeah.
And we have a very similar process for our podcast. You know, very, very similar is working through the different columns. We just use Airtable to manage that.
Right.
And it's very, very similar to what you said, but for podcasting.
Cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good stuff there, man. Thank you for sharing that.
Cool.
You're welcome.
Last, like, quick little rabbit hole. What are some of the cool ways people can use to promote their videos once they've got them made? And then after that, we could go ahead and wrap up. But I wanted to, I know we kind of teased at LinkedIn a minute ago. Yes. So I wanted to kind of touch on a couple things real quick before so we could close that loop out.
Okay. Well, it always comes back to just one of three things. One of three options is either going to be organic traffic to the video or paid traffic or influencer traffic. It's one of those three or you know, people have different names for them, but essentially, like on LinkedIn, that's why LinkedIn is exciting at the moment because you can get organic reach there more so than any other platform at the moment. Facebook kind of killed it. YouTube is tricky because you got to play the SEO game. But I mean, YouTube is actually really good for organic as well, just as a side note. LinkedIn is kind of like the new kid on the block with video now. You know, it's been, maybe had video for 2 years now, maybe. Mm-hmm. But still very new. Like, it's in the infant stages of their video game. So if you do a good job with your the SEO, like your metadata of your video, and you've got an engaging video, and you engage with your audience organically on these, on especially YouTube and LinkedIn, organically you can get some good reach. Pay then is the next one, where you can actually supplement and complement the organic game with paid ads. So this can work on any of the platforms where where you can run paid traffic to your video. So it works great on YouTube if you've got the funds. It's more of a branding and remarketing list building play than mm-hmm. anything else. Mm-hmm. So it's not, might not get direct sales from it, but you know, certainly building remarketing lists off videos that people watch works really well with paid ads. Mm-hmm. So that works great I've seen it work great on YouTube. We're using it ourselves on Facebook, for example, where we've got some organic content and we don't boost it, but we run ads to those videos to build remarketing lists, mm-hmm. Of a warm audience. If they watch like 2 or 3 minutes of your video content, they're going to be a much warmer audience than mm-hmm. a cold audience.
Yeah.
So that works really well. And LinkedIn has that as well. I've seen very few people still use the paid ads to drive views to their videos. So there's a way to do that on an affordable way as well. But I'm not an expert on that just yet. Mm-hmm. But you can do it on LinkedIn as well. And then, of course, the third one is through influencer sort of traffic. And this is really just where other people with audiences recommend your stuff or you do collaborations with them to help you get more of an audience. But I mean, you can do all those three, and eventually, if you can get all of them done for your content, that's how you grow. I would recommend, though, that you sort of pick one at a time and become good at one at a time before you move on to the next one.
Agreed. I love that. Yeah, because all that stuff, I mean, there's so many rabbit holes you can go down with the organic, paid, and the influencer. So, but either way, just hone in on whatever you're most comfortable with, or maybe you have momentum with right now, and just get really good at that. That's great advice. Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, is there anything, I guess like a quick, no, I think we covered everything actually. Is there anything that you felt like we left uncovered in terms of this conversation?
I think if you look at the successful channels or video creators out there, or people using video to grow their brands and their businesses, I think there's definitely something to be said about being vulnerable. And what that means to be vulnerable is that you've got to let people see you, see the real you. Mm-hmm. And it's scary as heck because there's a chance of being rejected. There's a chance of people seeing who you really are and them rejecting you as a result. There's that, it's a real fear that all of us share. And yet when you allow yourself to get seen, which is also the tagline of Splashio, just by the way, get seen. When you allow yourself to get seen and become vulnerable in that way, that's when people really, really respond to your content. That's when people can't get enough of watching your content and watching you and learning from you, or just experiencing you, or just being with you. Brené Brown talks about this as well, and it really is that. It's like you have to be sort of courageous in a way to be vulnerable and opening up in a way. Just as an example, my very, very first video on LinkedIn earlier this year, I only had about 500 connections at that time when I submitted the video. And I wasn't even going to do it because I actually just tested a feature on Splashio. And I thought, what should I talk about? No, I talked about an experience that I had, a mistake that I made on LinkedIn. And I just, let's just talk about that. It's fresh in my mind. And I wasn't going to publish it. And I thought, LinkedIn is kind of dead to me. I've only got 500 subscribers there or connections. I'm just going to publish there. No one's going to see it, so who cares? A week later or 2 weeks later, I had 27,000 views on that video. And over 200 comments. Obviously it was transcribed and with captions and a good headline. But I think the key that that made it spread was that vulnerability, because I was really vulnerable. I really shared a silly mistake that I made, and you know, I wasn't trying to be fancy or smart or anything like that. It was just, you know, a real story of what happened. And it really resonated with people, and this thing just went crazy. And I think you'll find that as well with, in general, videos that do better is where there's more vulnerability. And it's not an easy thing, because, you know, we've been conditioned to put these barriers up to protect ourselves, you know, self-preservation, really. So if you're able to find that vulnerability and that realness to when you're creating your video content, I guess any content, but it's so apparent with video because people see you, right? I think it can have an amazing impact. And ultimately that's really, for me, what it comes down to: helping people make an impact and making the world a better place. And we can do that with our voice. You know, we can do that with our voice through video. Sometimes you don't realize how much of an impact you're making. It's kind of like, you know, you can be changing people's lives without realizing at all. The example that Buckminster Fuller uses is the little bee that flies out to get some nectar. And all that bee is concerned with is getting a bit of nectar and heading back to go and impress the queen, right? Mm-hmm. And in the process, they pollinate all the flowers around them, but at a 90 degree to their direction of travel. And I think that's often how it is when you're traveling in your direction, you impact people 90 degrees to your direction of travel. And that's something worth noting. And so when you follow your path like that, and when you're vulnerable, you're going to be impacting people in a big way, and you might not even realize it, which is pretty awesome.
And you're doing it with Splashio and everything you're bringing. So appreciate that, man. I think that's a perfect way to end this podcast right there.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that. And we couldn't agree more. Everything turned around, you know, in this podcast when we started doing, we had these therapy sessions, and that's Matt and I just being completely vulnerable and laying the good and the bad out there. And we received the feedback, and people are like, we love those episodes, do more of those.
It was honestly us talking about you know, mistakes we've made in the business. We've had episodes where we've talked about losses of friends. We've had episodes where we've talked about anxiety and depression that's come as a result of our business practices. And, you know, we've gone all over the place, and that is actually one of the biggest catalysts to the growth of this podcast is when we've done those kinds of episodes. So it's a really powerful message.
Rings true.
There you go.
So Splashio is the tool. Is there anywhere else you'd want to send people? Anything else you'd want them to check out? Social media accounts, anything like that?
We've got a special offer for the listeners Hustle and Flowchart. We've set up a unique link for you guys at splashio.com/hustle. And so Splashio is just splashio.com and then /hustle. So on that page, you'll see you can get your first four videos done for free. It's like with about $100, not $99 value there. First video is done for free. It's all done manually, by the way. We don't use automated software to do that for you. So we've got real people. There's about four people, by the way, that works on every single video that comes through the system. So you'll have real people working on each of those four videos for you. And you can sign up for that free trial. It's a 7-day free trial at splashio.com/hustle.
That's so cool.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Awesome. Appreciate you getting in.
You're welcome.
Awesome. It's been amazing talking, and we'll report back. You know, we're going to see a case study out of our videos using Splashio as well. So we're going to test out LinkedIn.
Can't wait.
LinkedIn's going to go crazy for us. Just you wait.
I can't wait to see that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. For taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. Every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address, and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.
Go get it.